Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details. Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
G'day and welcome to the Pod Pod. It's Holmesy here talking all things AFL Fantasy Classic live for your Wednesday night, this 27th of March. No Foss on deck tonight. Unfortunately, the big fella still away working, but we are hopeful that we will get him back on deck in the next week or two. But we will have a little bit of a Foss update a little bit later on, just so the listeners can see how he started the season. But as it has been for the last few weeks at least, we do have Louie and Harmy here. And I'll start with you, Louie. How are you, mate? We've had a bit of a rough couple of weeks with your injury and whatnot, but how's life treating you, and how's the footy?
Yeah, not bad, mate. I suppose the plus side of what I've got going on means I can sit on the couch and watch plenty of footy pretty guilt-free, so been enjoying that. Wish it sort of reflected in my fantasy scoring, but hopefully that comes in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, mate, it's a trading game, and like I said to you pre-pod, we'll get to your ranking soon, but that's exactly where I was last year, and The messaging from you was that you're a very good coach and you can trade yourself back into it. So I have those exact same words for you, mate. Just need to stick with it and it'll all come good. And we have two-time top 10 finisher, including, what was it, runner-up, Harmy? How are you?
Runner-up in 2019 and I think sixth in 2017. Yeah, I'm going pretty well, thanks, mate. Just caught a little bit of the footy on the weekend. It's some good games, actually, so yeah, no, keen to talk some fantasy.
Yeah, it was good for me actually as well. The wife and the kids went down south and I used the opportunity to actually watch a bit of footy. So I generally get to watch a lot on replay, but it was good to actually sit down and watch a lot live, which hasn't happened a lot recently. So let's get stuck into the round that was. We'll go through our ranks and give a bit of an update for our plus threes and negative threes. And I'll throw to you first, Lou. Whereabouts are you sitting at the moment and what were your plus three and negative three?
Threw out a tweet during the week that it's going to be tough to replace Dossie, but certainly stepped up to the plate. I'm at 43,170 and going strong. Thank you very much. And that was off the back of a 1767. So hopefully we can pump those numbers up a bit. It's in best 18, those scores always suck, don't they? It's really disgusting not to see a 2 in front of your score. But what, 3 more rounds of best 18, then we can start getting into some best 22.
Yeah, beautiful, mate. And how about giving us those plus 3 and negative 3s?
I'll give my plus 3 to Isaac Heaney. He's done it a couple of games in a row now. He looks phenomenal in that midfield, so got to pay respect there. My negative 3 goes to Nick Dacos. It's just putrid score, 61 from a bloke that you played nearly a mil for. So, rightfully gets that negative 3 for me.
Yeah, and fair enough. We might actually deep dive in our hot topics a little bit later on with the Nick Dacos. It's a bit of talk in the community about where you go this week. I think some are going to hold strong, but rightly so, considering that there's a potential fin tag coming up soon. Some coaches are looking to jump off. Harmy, how about you?
Yeah, didn't have too bad a week, mate. I had a score of 1859, so probably a little bit above average because I think my rank went up to 13,027. So heading in the right direction, hopefully. A plus three. Geez, I might throw it to there's a couple of guys that have performed pretty well there based on their price, but I guess I'll give it to Cherry. 104 on debut, priced at 677. So that was pretty good. I was happy with that. Trade in, and then my negative three. I'm going to give it to my lowest scoring player in the 18, which was Nat Fyfe, getting a rub on the back and then just sitting it out as the sub. That was a bit disappointing to see. He was headed for another score over 80, so that was a bit of a letdown from him and Freo.
Does that early sub sort of change your plans and your thoughts with him, Harmy, knowing that that sub can always be around the corner and they're already talking about him having to manage a back injury?
You know what? I was less concerned about that in best 18. So I'm probably just going to hold this week and see what happens, mate, because I guess if there is a sub risk, then I've potentially got somebody else coming on board and not going to lose too many points from it if he does get subbed out. So I'm feeling okay about it.
Yeah, you just hope that it doesn't happen round four, gather round when we've got 22 players on field. But yeah, unlucky with that. He's been a pretty good pick so far. And as a Dockers man myself, I hope that he's needed for a couple of full games soon. So my score this week, a bit like you, Harmy, 1855, so just the 4 points behind you, but that saw me rise about 7,000-8,000 ranks up into 10,164, so just outside 10K, which isn't the worst spot to be at this time of year. I think, especially with this round coming up, with a lot of teams going to be missing a Tom Green, Whitfield, Flanders, potentially even a Took Miller type, then potentially there's room for us to kind of claw a few points back there. And my plus three, and he goes to my trade in as well, Harry Sheezel. So I went onto the Sheez this week after watching him the week before. And 121 on debut in that game was a very good trade in. And I was pretty happy to get that score. My negative three, unfortunately, goes to one of my Dockers boys, Hayden Young. Like you, Harmy, I wanted to give it to one of my lowest scores that actually made my 18. And it didn't really feel fair to give it to Jeremy Sharp, who put up a very respectable 73 from the rookie. So Hayden Young, 75. I've seen a lot of coaches talking about getting off him this week, which, to be honest, might be fair, but I think I'm still in the camp of holding. It was only last week where he was on 88 just after three-quarter time before he needed to move back. So I'm happy to give him one more, and hopefully this week there's talk of him needing to tag Jordan Dawson, which hopefully means there's going to be a lot of tackles on offer and that can boost his scoring. But absolutely, he's on notice at the moment. Louis, I'm going to throw to you for one of our new segments. We've got DOSWatch. So why don't you give us an update on where our Dossie boy's sitting at the moment?
Yep. So Dossie scored the 1,753. So I did pip him at the post there, which is nice to see. But his rank is 38,330. So definitely DOS areas there. Wouldn't expect anything less from the great man.
Yeah, I suppose it's public knowledge now that he's jumped across to Supercoach and we're a bit filthy. But to be honest, it's kind of a positive thing because there's actually more teams and more players that play Supercoach. There's even scope for his ranking to get even worse over there. So we should probably get a Supercoach update from him at some point. But Harmy, why don't you give us FossWatch as well? Why don't you let us know how Stato started the year?
Yeah, we're making Stato great again. 1879. So he's had a pretty decent round and his rank is 11333. So, well, sounds like he's in between you and I, Holmesy. So not too bad, though. Pretty respectable. And he's negative three. I'd have to give it to Viney, I reckon. 60 for somebody who would have thought was heading in premium directions would have been a bit of a letdown for the Foss.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys caught much of that game, but with the way Hawthorn were possessing the ball early, there was really no ball for any of those Melbourne sides. They were just getting the ball and running it forward and kicking goals. So, yeah, 60 for Viney. No, oh, I didn't see that kind of a score coming, but we do know that he's had a bit of a floor over the years. So, is what it is. All right, so before we get on, we've just got a few housekeeping things we're going to get to, and I'm just going to give an update of the Pod Challenge. We were going to do it last week, but we thought we'd give it another round just to let the scores kind of even out a little bit. So currently we have three teams inside of the top 100. So we've got Jack's team, Not Here to Ruck Spiders, currently sitting fourth. So that's an unbelievable start. We've got, I think it's Rod's team. What's that? A Stapler, currently sitting 15. So very good as well. And then Jared's team, Jordan Dawson's Creek, sitting 58. So three teams inside the top 100 so far. And I have no doubt that that's going to increase as the season goes on. So we're hoping to beat, I think it was 23 that we ended up with last year. So fingers crossed we can go one better. But I'm going to throw to you, Harmy, now that I know how much you enjoy giving the Content Creators Cup update. So how did the Pod Pod boys fare this week in the Content Creators Cup?
Yeah, thanks, mate. Now I'm in the Content Creators Cup. I'm even more excited, if that's possible. So, yeah, the Content Creators Cup, the Fantasy Finance boys, Bales and Guesty have organised that and sponsored by Infinite Wealth. We had a 50% strike rate. So, Holmesy, I got a win over Calvin from Traders by 32 points, and you got the win over MJ from Coaches Panel by 65, so a fair win there. But unfortunately, the Ball Boys, so Luke and Mitch from the Ball Boys had knocked over Lou and Stato this week, which, geez, Mitch must have got a fair old score because Stato's was 1879, so he's got to be up around 1900, which is pretty good for the round. So there we are. Consider yourself updated, Holmesy, but you and I just propping up the team at the minute.
I tell you what, it was good to get a win this week after I got pipped by Hef last week by 1 point, and that was off the back of a sarong 160. So yeah, it was good to get a win on the board. All right, lads, let's get into the hot topics. We've got a little bit to talk about before we get to a bit of a player segment and then the listener question. So the first hot topic, I touched off it off the top, but Nick Dacos. So I'm going to get Louis's opinion as an owner, and then I'm going to get Harmy's opinion as a non-owner. So Lou, what are you thinking at the moment with Nick Dacos now that he's put that score on the board? He's essentially dropped back. I think he's very close to what he started at, maybe just slightly more. Is it just as simple as hold him and get him through to his bye, or can some savvy coaches look to jump off him knowing that he's got Brisbane this week that may or may not be a tough matchup, but then more than likely he's going into Finn McGuinness before his bye?
Look, I tend to think it's a hold. We sort of knew what we were signing up for Nick Dacos, and we knew that tag was coming. We decided to start him anyway. He's 20K down on his starting price. He's got a 140 break even. You know, is every chance that he actually makes that score? And I tend to think if you are trading out of Nick Dacos, obviously you're going to want him back in your side at some point. So you're using two trades to do it, and there's every chance that's actually four if you can't really get him on the other end a little bit later on in the season. So I think that's something that you do just have to wear, and maybe your advantage now comes from owning him with a trade in the pocket despite other coaches being able to pick him up a little bit cheaper. But even at that point, I don't think he's going to plummet much past 900K. I think he will stay pretty firmly at about 950K. So, yeah, there's going to be coaches still sort of digging into the pockets to go and get him.
Harmy, as a non-owner who doesn't have any kind of emotional investment at the moment, do you have a differing opinion, or do you echo Lou's thoughts there?
Nah, I probably echo Lou's thoughts. If I was an owner, I think I'd be holding. Put it that way. I mean, I think Lou said the break even was 140. Well, he can hit that. So I wouldn't be too stressed about that. He is playing. You still would have been counting him as a premium scorer in this buy round. And if you're anything like me, you've got other issues to patch up. So I've got Nick Caulfield injured, Sexton a bit of a concern. And look, really, any rookies that you have missed still worth a shot. So I'd say trading him out would be a fairly low priority for owners.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. I think majority of teams are going to have higher priorities with those players or getting on those rookies that have popped or those mid prices that have good roles and good upside as well. So it would be a very luxurious move, but at the same time, to win and do well in this comp, it does take balls at times. And if he does come out and has another average score this week into an average score against Finn, then that price could seriously plummet. But I think I'm in the same boat. I'd be holding as well. And to be honest, he's probably a good VC option off what he did last week. I can't imagine he's had a good week on the track and probably comes out pretty hungry. The next sort of hot topic we want to just gloss over is the fact that Carlton and Brisbane are coming off the bye. So I'll go to you first, Lou. Are there any sort of players from either of these teams that you'd be looking to target or you've got on your watch list coming into the next few rounds?
Off the top of the head, probably just Josh Dunkley, I think, with those two teams. Been 110 averaging midfielder for a couple of years now and will be relatively unique as well, I imagine. So he's probably the main one. Anybody else in those two teams that you're eyeing off there, Holmesy?
No, I think Dunkley's the one. I said in the preseason that he probably would have been a player that I might have even looked to start, being a little bit underpriced. But unfortunately, he had his bye. But he's come out. What's he averaging? 114, 115 at the moment. Yes, there was no Lachie Neale last week, and he went 125. So maybe that's, you know, a little bit overs. But yeah, I think Brisbane are pretty weak in that midfield, and they're going to have to do something. And he's going to have to be a big part of that. But we did see last year that the brand of footy that they played wasn't necessarily conducive to fantasy scoring at times, and that sort of coincided with his drop off in form towards the end of the year, albeit coming back off a bit of an injury, Lou.
A bit out of left field, this one, but obviously Brisbane have had a bit of a poorer start. It's going to be a risk, but do we just have a fleeting look at somebody like a Dane Zorko? Obviously, he's a bit prehistoric at his age. I think he's about 35, but he can go at 100 clip pretty comfortably even still and plays a pretty significant role in that side. And I imagine he's going to be one of those senior players that Fags does sort of lean upon to get him back into contention this early on. Is that a little sneaky pod for the pod, that one?
It's definitely a pod, especially there's been a little bit of word and I'm not sure exactly how much I trust it. We need to see it first, but there is talk that potentially he might be one of those players that ends up in the back line to give him a bit of good ball use off the back now that Coleman's out. So maybe if that switches, you never know. We saw that a few years ago when he had the defender status and he had a serious ceiling when he was in that role before. But the same injury concerns are always there with the Dane Zorko. Kind of mirrors a Nat Fyfe where potentially if they're up by a certain amount, then he could get subbed, which would be a bit of a disaster as a premium. But I don't hate the idea. Lou, Harmy, what have you got?
I was just going to say a couple of other cheaper guys. Holmesy, that I would flag is if people don't have Zach Williams, I probably wouldn't have any trouble bringing him in at 486,000. I think he's still got upside. And another one that I think is worth a bit of a look is Jack Carroll, 375,000. And I think he started as a sub in the first game, didn't he? He went really well. And then he scored pretty well in his second game. So if people are looking to pay up for a rookie, he's probably worth just having a look at when the teams are named.
Yep, don't mind that one, Harmy, although he's a little bit of an elevated price tag now. Word is Sam Walsh looking at a round 5/round 6 return, so you might get 3-4 games out of him in this role, then it might switch up, and to be honest, that might be enough to get him up to 5-550 if he continues this scoring, so I don't hate that option either. The last sort of hot topic that I want to touch on, and Harmy, I'll throw it to you because you sort of suggested it, so there's been all this talk about best 18 and needing these ceiling players and whatnot to score in a best 18 system. But are coaches kind of forgetting that there is still next round, gather round, which is going to be full 22 on field? And could coaches potentially find themselves a little bit exposed if they go a little bit too guns and rookies heavy, knowing that they're going to need 22 players next week?
Yeah, well, that's right. I mean, the trades that you do this week and then looking ahead to the trades for next week have got to set you up for a best 22 structure and make sure you've got your positioning correct. So I'll give you an example. I sort of said before that I've got Caulfield and he's a priority trade out for me now going in for surgery. I was floating around a range of different options, but I think what I'm going to do is try and correct it and get him up to Massimo and then I can bring on another rookie in either my midfield and have three rookies on field, or either that or two rookies in my forward line being Reed and Wilson. So, yeah, I guess I'm just trying to shore up what my team structure is going to look like for next week when we resume best 22 for gather round.
Yeah, I really like that, and it's a good point on Caulfield. I can't remember exactly who it was last year, but I think I had one or two players that were in the same boat. They were rookies, and admittedly, they weren't as highly priced as Caulfield was. They might have been sort of 250 to 270K, but you kind of get caught in a trap where you say, oh, I'll fix them next week, I'll fix them next week, and then all of a sudden it's round six or round seven, and you kind of find yourself in a little bit of no man's land with your cash gen because you haven't bit the bullet and got them out. So I think that's really important that if you do have a Nick Caulfield, he's almost the most important priority this week to get him up to a Mussimo or Powell or whatever you can get, just so that you get that cash gen continuing to flow, because the teams that don't have him that are on their way, you're just going to get further behind if you don't fix that cash gen. Would you agree there, Luke?
Yep, absolutely, mate.
Yeah, beautiful. All right, so what we're going to do now, we're going to get into the questions a bit later on, but before we do that, we're going to do a little bit of a segment steal. Dossie kind of did this when he was on Pod. We're going to take the like or dislike from our friends over at the Plus Six podcast. So we've got a whole bunch of players that we're going to talk about, and some we'll gloss over pretty quick, but some others we'll deep dive a little bit more. So I'll start with you, Harmy. Caleb Sarong, clearly it's a like, but being priced at, what, 1.05 mil, is he someone you can still target, or do you think coaches like us that don't have him have kind of missed the boat?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of similar to the starting structure, isn't it? You're not chasing the highest priced player in the comp. So for me, I wouldn't be looking at chasing him at this point.
What about owner that might be looking to sideways him from a Tom Green? So you're not actually spending too much cash and you're essentially keeping the same structure but just jumping across?
Means you've been choosing not to have Tom Green for a while, because you're not going to bring him back in next week, are you? So, geez, you know, people with Tom Green should have been thinking about that from the start. So I don't really love it, but geez, if that's all you've got to do for the week and the only issue you've got, you could do it, I suppose. But I think that there's like rookies and mid prices you should be looking to bring in before you chase something like that.
Louis, Zach Merritt, off back-to-back 120s, definitely the mainstay in that midfield and looking pretty good. Like or dislike?
Yeah, love Zach Merritt. He's been a perennial 110-plus player for God knows how long now, and he's got the Saints matchup this week. Doesn't have that buy to worry about either, and it's very much his midfield at the moment, especially with Darcy Parrish under an injury cloud at the moment. So, yeah, big tick there.
What about
What about
big trading options? Windy going to go in and tag him there this week, Lou? Wouldn't be concerned?
Oh, yeah, potentially they give him a little bit of attention. I think that's a pretty winnable game for the Saints, so I'm not sure if they go full lockdown mode on Zach Merritt. I'm not sure he's the one that's dragging the Bombers over the line each and every week. So, yeah, there is a slight flag there, but I think Zach Merritt is someone from a seasonal aspect that you're not going to be too flat about. He's someone I'm pretty confident can go at 110 at a minimum.
Just on that that Windy tag, Harmy, I actually didn't really see that as much of a tag last week against Dacos. He did go to him at stoppages at times, but it seemed more like it was just the St Kilda midfield just playing a very disciplined system in transition. It wasn't just Windy had to go to him. I saw Seb Ross pushing across, and then it was Steele. So I think we might just be looking at St Kilda just being a very disciplined side and being hard to score on, I think. But, yeah, maybe it is a bit of a flag. Sticking with you, Harmy, so Nasai Wanganeen-Millara off the back of his 122, coaches that might be potentially looking to get off Whitfield just because they've made their cash and they need to keep scoring. Is he someone you'd look at, or priced at, I think, 95-ish? Is he someone that potentially is getting close to his price and we can get later?
Jeez. Can't really sit on the fence, can you? Oh, look, I'm going to say... I say like. I mean, he looked bloody good and he scored 120, didn't he? So I guess if I had to make a choice, it's a like, yeah.
Yep, like that. Louis sticking with his St Kilda teammate, Jack Steele. So 108, 120 looks to be back to his fittest best. We're not saying he's going to go 120, but do you think there's still scope to trade in Jack Steele?
Yeah, I think there is. You know, 900K is obviously going to be value there, but I've still got the same concerns over Jack Steele. I said in the preseason, I don't think he necessarily needs to be the one that spreads and the one that is kicking the footy too much. And that sort of showed on the weekend. Everyone was wetting their pants a bit about Jack Steele's scoring. And look, rightfully so, at halftime he was on about 60. But That was established by a tackle flaw, which we know happens with Jack Steele. I still worry about how he builds his score, though. So he had three kicks up until three-quarter time and then filled up with seven kicks in the last quarter. You could look at it one way and think maybe that could have been an astronomical score, but I do sort of – I read into that a little bit. I think that's a bit of game style, and he's doing the coalface work, and then he was able to sort of do a little bit of that chip-chip in the last quarter when they were on their toes and up and about, beating Collingwood by a fair margin in the end there. So, yeah, it's still got minor flags with him, but I think at the price point, you're still going to get value there.
Okay, then I'll stick with you for one of your Port boys, priced around the same. They might not be exact, but Zach Butters. So two pretty good games now. He was on, what, I think it was 104 at three-quarter time, played a very, very good game against Richmond before copping that little bit of a cork calf towards the end of the game and only having 12 points in the last. Would you rather a Zach Butters over a Jack Steele?
Yes, I would. I think Butters has got that go about him where he can really get onto a ceiling. And I don't know if it's just biasness, but I think that he fills up the stat lines a little bit better and does show that ability to really spread. I think he averaged something like 17 uncontested disposals last year off the top of my head, which is quite impressive for a player that was sort of pigeonholed as being that in and under sort of goer in that midfield. So, yeah, I'm big on Zach Butters, and that 117 came off the back of one tackle. So I do have to think there's a little bit of upside there.
And just because you're the Port man, how many games do they have in a row at Adelaide Oval to come?
Well, I think it's it might be like nine sort of pre-mid-season bye. So, yeah, it's plenty.
And we know that he loves to score at Adelaide Oval in front of his home fans. Harmy, now, I think you brought him in round two, but you didn't start him. Isaac Heaney, I was on record last week saying that it still wasn't too late, and he's gone out and done that. But is it too late for coaches now, knowing that he's priced pretty highly and he's got a bye coming up in two rounds?
Yeah, look, I guess I'm less keen on him, but he's still got almost 120 again. So he's just about the form player in the competition at the moment. And he's not priced over a mil like Sarong, is he? So I'd say like. I mean, he's got that bye coming up, but what's not to like about what he's doing on the field?
Not to mention he's got Richmond and West Coast coming up in his next two games, which are two of the softest fantasy scoring matchups that you could really have. So I'm not against it. You've taken him on this far, but he just keeps getting it done. And I can't see anything in that midfield changing at the moment. It kind of just, those players start and have those seasons where they just keep on going and they're in their career best form, and that reeks of Isaac Heaney at the moment. So, Harmy.
So, like, let's have a look at it. He's priced at 861. Merritt and Sarong, Green, we've spoken about all of them. They're all over a mil. So, he's like $150,000 cheaper than all of them.
Yep, in the forward line when we're starved of premium options as well. So, yeah, I would tick off anyone going Isaac Heaney at this point, but just be aware that coaches that got on earlier, we're well ahead with the cash gen and the scoring. But, yeah, fantastic player and in some good form. Back to you, Lou. We'll skip this next one. But Connor Rosie, so currently averaging 112, got him at a 106 price tag. I suppose the question we need to ask you is, do you see him as a top eight mid from this point, or do you think he's pretty much priced at what he's going to be at for the rest of the year?
No, I do see him as a top eight mid. I've been pretty firm on that all preseason. He's a player that does fill all the stat lines, and he's stepped up in the first two games as captain of the footy club too. Captain option makes him important, and he's still probably value if you consider that he is going to go at that sort of 112 plus mark, which I've got him pegged at. He's a player that just builds his score really consistently through a range of different avenues. So I think he will be top eight.
Yeah, I really like the pick. There's been two games in a row now where he's had I think he was on 70 at halftime in round one, and then even on the weekend he was on 68, and he hasn't really put that massive score on owners' heads yet. But I think it's going to come, and with a few of these home games at Adelaide Oval as the captain, I think he's primed to really break out. So, yep, like the Connor Rosie pick. Harmy, Tom Stewart, for owners looking to jump off Whitfield. What are your thoughts on Tom Stewart? He had 115 on the weekend, but that was off the back of 10 intercept marks, and that's not going to happen every week. But where do you see Tom Stewart in terms of being a top six defender?
Yeah, and in a milestone game as well. He had 85 in the first round. So what's he averaging? 100, priced at just under 100, I think. So he's got a good run as well. They have a good start to the season, Geelong, with the teams that they play against. But I'm just going to say dislike as a trading option just at this point in time. You'd be getting what you pay for, and I think you've got to be looking for a bit more value if you can.
Yeah, I think Hawthorn would be pretty stupid to not put someone to him this week. I know Adelaide tried at times, but it's pretty obvious that when Geelong are up and about and playing their best footy, that Stewart's probably the number one guy there in controlling everything in that back half. And when you can disrupt him, it disrupts their system. So if you did go in this week, just prepare that, you know, maybe they do throw a Finn McGuinness to him. He's done that sort of role in the past as just a body that's going to follow him around and not let him dictate. But I think it's Tom Stewart. He's done it for 5 years. I think he'll be around the mark. I just don't think there's heaps of value at this point in time. Lou, Tom Power. Talk to us about Tom Power, because you were very active in the group chat after Tom Power's game. You said you really liked it, and there wasn't, you couldn't not like it. Do we think that role sticks?
Yeah, I'll have to think so. It was the leading CBA getter for North Melbourne on the weekend. We know Tom Power was a pretty prolific junior. He's probably one that's burned a couple of coaches, certainly in keeper and in drafts, just because it has taken a little while for him to come on, for him to get that role. We do sort of know that Clarko likes him, and that looks to be the case in the first two games this year. Really like the fact that he went at an 86% disposal efficiency despite having the 29 touches. That's really good sign to me that he's using it well. 8 clearances, fantastic there. 10 score involvements, beautiful, and 500 metres gained. Slight concern that it was such an open game, and so he did fill up on a lot of contested pill. Over a third of his ball was uncontested. So 20 uncontested touches. So it wasn't getting too much contested stuff, but that's more LDU's bread and butter, you would have thought. A little bit of a concern on a bigger ground where it's a bit more open, but I think at the price point with the break even, it's a pretty low risk play there. And with the sort of quality of forwards we've got around him, he's one that I'd be strongly looking at.
Lou, would you be concerned about Jai Simpkin coming back into the midfield this week, though?
No, not particularly. I think Jai Simpkin's sort of been shifted out in favour of a Tom Powell, and that's why potentially he didn't really fire off in that preseason game, or even sort of went quiet when Jai Simpkin went off with that concussion. In fact, I think he's a pivotal cog within that team, Jai Simpkin, but I think him playing at half forward is important for their makeup within their midfield.
Yeah. Just one more point on Tom Power, 85% time on ground, which is up there with the best for midfielders. So it shows, at least at the moment, that he's got the tank to be in there. And at 580K in the forward line, I think coaches would be silly not to at least entertain the idea of bringing in Tom Power. Harmy, this one hurts because he sat in my team for 95% of the preseason, despite you telling me he played Sample all year. But Matt Crouch, is it too late to go to Matt Crouch after 2 games averaging 110?
You should be listening to a few more things I say, Holmesy, because I started with him and he's one of my best players. So definitely a like.
Yeah, can coaches still bring him in?
Well, let's have a look. He is now priced at 791. But he's hit 110 2 weeks in a row. Yeah, he's hit 110 2 weeks in a row. So, look, you're going to have I feel like that mix in the Adelaide Crows team is changing a bit. But for the time being, I'm a very happy owner. And you could bring him in. Yep.
Yep. Lou?
Yeah, I've not really changed my thoughts on Matt Crouch. I think he does have that propensity to score, but at the same time, he just needs to do so bloody much to do it. He got 110, he had 37 disposals, 13 kicks, 24 handballs, which, that's all well and good. It's sort of expecting a bit more of a ceiling there. 280 metres gained. And then all week we hear about how within that Crows midfield it didn't work. They're a bit vanilla, they're one-paced, and they need something more in there. So to me, unless Rory Laird's being shifted out, which there was a couple of rumours that that would happen in the preseason. Matt Crouch potentially is one of those guys. I'm sort of thinking maybe the boat's been missed there. And looking at the other end, I wouldn't be surprised to see a bloke like an Isaac Rankin or Josh Rochelli jump in there this week.
We said that all along, though, hey, didn't we? But the thing is with Crouch, he doesn't really have a secondary position. You know, he's not going to be sitting on the back flank or the wing. You know, I don't know how much of a forward he is. So if he's sort of not on ball, I don't know if he's in the team. So I think that that he's sort of proven himself to do what the coaches want, and I think he's in there for a good few weeks yet.
Yep. No, it's interesting. I'm not sure I'd be trading into him just yet, just now, but definitely coaches that started him keep riding that good thing for as long as you can. All right, we'll do three more names before we jump on to the Twitter questions. Louis, Luke Jackson. So we knew, well, we kind of forecasted what would happen without Darcy with his scoring history, and he's come out 95 in round one and a 108 in round two. Seems like he's taking all of his opportunities, and to be honest, he had a pretty tough matchup against Big O in round one, and even Cherry's no slouch in terms of the hitouts and stuff around the ground. Is it too late to target a Luke Jackson now with Darcy potentially being 2 to 3 weeks away, or can you see potentially Freo still wanting him to be up around the ball as a bit more of a dynamic midfielder at times too?
No, I think you've missed him. I think the decision had to be made prior to round one. It's just less weeks now until Sean Darcy's back, and we know Sean Darcy's going to be taking the lion's share of those ruck contests when he does return. So well done to those who picked him, but anybody eyeing him off, I'd probably just let that one go through to the keeper and just those Luke Jackson owners, they're going to have to be trading him sort of come round 6, 7 or 8, and otherwise they're going to be losing points. So I think you can make it up the difference there.
Yep, don't mind that at all, Luke, but you are right. Owners that got on him have been rewarded so far, and who knows, maybe the Darcy injury will stretch out a little longer and potentially you get a little bit of coverage for a Grundy or a Gorn during the buys. But yeah, probably not trading into him this time. Harmy, one for you, Christian Salem. So averaging 96, saved his last two scores with a filthy 61-point final quarter. I think he was on 19 at half time, and that was probably one of the toughest watches I've ever had to do. But do coaches look to get off Christian Salem now with that midfield role gone, or do they pretty much just have to lie in their bed and continue riding it until his bye?
Depends what other issues they've got. If I was an owner, I'd probably hold right now, but I'd be looking to get off as soon as I can, as soon as the opportunity arose. Yeah,
well, I am an owner and I've got Caulfield to fix, but that's one of the moves I'm looking at in terms of going a Salem down to free up some cash to then get Caulfield up to someone else as well. So it's definitely something I'm looking at, but it will be dictated by selection and also by what other issues coaches have. Last one for you, Lou, before we get onto the questions. Marcus Bontempelli. So coach has paid up a 119 price tag, over $1 million to start. And he's basically done what he did last year in terms of started with a 90 and a low ton. Has the Eagles this week, but I wouldn't be really advising coaches to jump off. But is it potentially someone to target, knowing that he's dropped 50K and he's got a few lush matchups to come?
Yeah, I think so. It really starts here for Marcus Bontempelli in terms of his matchups. I'll bring them up in just a sec, but I think the fact that last season he averaged 117 and that included a couple of 90s to start would be seen as a good thing in that he can turn it around and get that ceiling up and start scoring for you. The next couple of matchups, he's got the Eagles, Geelong, Essendon, Saints, Fremantle, Hawthorn, Richmond. So really opens up for him now. We know what sort of a ceiling he's got from last season, but also from this season too. He started round one like a house on fire and looked to be going sort of 150 areas. And even last week, he started really well and got a bit of an ankle tweak, which slowed him down a bit. So, big fan of Marcus Bontempelli. I think he's a great target and he's a good captain option.
Clearly, we're speculating, but is that little ankle knock a bit of a concern if they're, well, not if, but when they're up heavily against the Eagles midway through the third quarter, is he potentially a sub out to save his legs?
Oh, look, potentially, mate, but that's all guesswork. We know that they give him a bit of a jab and they sort of get up and going. That was kind of the narrative with the Zach Butters too. They played West Coast and Richmond and I suppose he did spend a bit of time on the bench, Zachy Butters, but no, I think Marcus Bontempelli is their Rolls Royce and he'll stay out there. He's a tough bugger.
Yeah, fair enough too. And yeah, if I had the coin and no other issues, Marcus Bontempelli is someone I'd look to target. There's no reason that he won't actually hit his break even this week against the Eagles with a monster score. And we might actually be looking at the cheapest price point that we can get him this year if he goes on a tear like he did last year. So definitely one to watch. All right, let's finish off with some of these questions. This first one comes from Ninja Spoon. I'm going to throw to you, Harmy. So he's got Grundy. Is there still scope to go Grundy to Cherry this week? Or do you think with the round four, or the round three and the round four matchups being, I think he's got Nank this week and then he's got the Eagles next week. Do you think you wait till round five and then potentially get him up to Marshall English?
All right. Grundy, 722,000, not going up. Cherry, 677,000, going up in price. So if he doesn't do that move and he waits, it's actually going to cost him money to buy Cherry from Grundy. So I think it's probably still a reasonable move.
Yeah, I think what he's saying is he either pulls the trade now or he doesn't pull the trade and then he waits until round five when Grundy's on his buy and then he goes up to a Marshall or an English.
Yes, I probably wouldn't. It depends what else he's got on the go, but I wouldn't have any trouble bringing him in now because you're going to miss 2 weeks of price rises from Cherry.
Yep, fair enough. Lou, this next one's for you. This one comes from Nick. Do you think Flanders is a must-get straight off his buy? Or do you think, and we're just speculating here, but is it worth jumping on a Jack McRae this week, being a bit of a unique given the strong VFL form?
Oh, look, I don't think Flanders is necessarily a must-have, but he's certainly be pretty high up the list in terms of priorities. As I mentioned before, there's not a lot of options up forward, and Flanders has put up some impressive scoring already this season and also in the back half of last season in a similar role. So definitely be circling Flanders as a target. In terms of jumping onto Jack McRae, this might shock you. I actually love it. you are sort of giving yourself over to Bevo Roulette and you never know. Wouldn't even surprise me if he made in the sub just because there's clearly a little bit of a, I guess that relationship might be a little bit strained potentially, but 47 disposals in the VFL and comes back versus the Eagles. McRae's a bit of an outside player, so he should get plenty of the outside ball there, and I think he'll have a bit of a chip on his shoulder in terms of a bit of an FU to his doubters, but also probably more importantly Bevo there. So I actually like Jack McRae as a massive point of difference, and I mentioned the fixture for Bont. Obviously, Jack McRae has got that exact same fixture as well. So, no, I like both those options there. But if I was, I'd be playing it safe with Flanders over those two.
Yeah, look, I cannot stress this enough. He might come in this week and he might score against the Eagles being the Eagles, but I would need to see Jack McRae's role first in that side with everything they've changed. We love Jack McRae, but we love the old Jack McRae, and he hasn't been Jack McRae for a while, so I would need to see it first. It would take some serious balls to jump into Jack McRae blind this week after what we kind of lived through last year, but don't mind the thinking. I'll just be waiting. Harmy, this one's from Jaden Fisher. Thoughts on either a Sinclair or a Newman, purely because lots of people are jumping on Nasiah this week and, you know, potentially – we know what Sinclair can do. He was coming in underdone, and we've seen what Newman's done as well. I'm not as keen on Newman, but could it be a play to kind of zig instead of zag and go Sinclair and try and jump ahead of the comp there when they're all going to Nasiah?
Sinclair, price at 901,000, scored 79. Not keen on that. And Newman, yeah.
Past performance does not indicate future performance, Harmy.
Yeah, but I'm still not 100% clear on how that's going to work with Sinclair, Wanganui Malira, Bonner. I'm just not too sure on that. Saints lineup just at the minute. Need to sort of see a bit more, actually. And yeah,
we can't, sorry, Harmy, to cut you off. I was just going to say, we can't sit here last week and say potentially Sinclair coming back is going to affect Bonner and not look at it the other way as well. Even though Bonner was quite disappointing, I think there is a role that's being filled there that Sinclair doesn't necessarily have to be back doing.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Lou.
Fair enough. Yeah. We do have two years of a 100 averaging player, though, so I'm not willing to discard it just yet off the first game back.
Not at all, but I think you'd want to give it a little bit longer just for that value to really creep in for you.
Yep, don't mind that
anyway,
thinking there, Lou.
To answer the question, mate, I'm not really that keen on Sinclair or Newman at the moment, to be honest, even though Newman's putting up some decent scoring. We'll just wait and see. You're sort of paying about what he's putting up anyway.
Fair enough. Louis, this one here from V. Massimo. So clearly he's a big fantasy fan. He's really stuck. He can't get himself and Powell unless he trades Billings. He currently has Howes at D6 and then he's stuck with Reed and Coff on the bench. So we kind of touched on this before, but is the fix-up more important, fixing up either Reed or Caulfield, more important than getting both Powell and Massimo this week?
Well, who are you trading Caulfield and Reed to, boys, down back? There's probably not many options there, is there?
Nah, but I think you got to fix at least one of them, right?
Yeah, look, potentially, but I'm not seeing what you're going to be picking up there. You might get a Toby Stenck for what, 25K, and then maybe plateaus a little bit there. I don't mind, you know, because you're fixing those up for value anyway to make a bit of coin, and you're doing the same on the other end with a Massimo and a Power 2. Billings was the 40 on the dot. He'll make a little bit more money yet, but he's got that buy, so I don't actually mind chasing those value players and a Massimo and a Power there just because they will be playing and probably make more money over the next couple of weeks than what you will be going down from a Caulfield or
Reed.
Does
it change your thinking knowing that if he does get the Caulfield up to Massimo, then that's going to move Howes to D7? Do you think Howes needs to be on field?
In a best 22 or best 18?
Well, I mean, it's both, right?
Yeah, he's fine on field, so I don't really have any strong opinions either which way. I think he's a solid rookie at D6, but I think he's fine to be at D7 too.
Yeah, I suppose it would be, to quote the coaches panel, your boys, Luke, it would be team dependent. So it would really depend on what forward rookie is coming on in that scenario, right? If you're having to bring another rookie on, potentially you don't have to if you're going Billings down, but I like that train of thought, Lou. I think you've nailed it. This one's for you, Harmy. This one's from John. Zane Dersma versus Manor. So I think we're looking at cheap versus a little bit of an inflated price, but I think with a Zane Dersma, you're probably going to get a little bit more job security with Geelong already showing that they're not afraid to put Manor into the sub vest, and they still have Atkins, Brune and Duncan to come back into that side. So where would you be looking there? Going down and using that cash or playing it a little bit safer for the job security?
Jeez. I just think there's potentially better options than both of them, but I'll stick with what the question is. If you had the choice, I'd probably choose, Dersma. He scored okay on the weekend, but he's best 22, whereas Manor could be just showing the door at any point in time, I feel. But I'd probably be looking outside of those two guys anyway, to be honest with you, mate.
Especially if you got Clark and Dempsey as well in your side. That's three Geelong rookies. You'd be sweating bullets every single Thursday afternoon, I reckon.
Yeah, I think if you're looking to go someone around that Manor price point, then I think you don't look there this week and hold off until you can get Harvey Thomas the week after, who now has that 100 in his price cycle with the Gold Coast and St Kilda matchups coming up. I think that's where you'd probably look to go. But yeah, I think just wait till teams. If Manor's selected this week with all of those players coming back, then he is probably a decent option to go. But you do need to be aware that he can be a sub risk at any time, and that's going to really kill his cash gen, Lou.
What about our boy, Chrissy Burgess? He'd be about the same price, wouldn't he?
Yep. I prefer Burgess over both.
Lower break even.
Yep.
Yeah. Who do Adelaide have this week? They have Freo. So
Fremantle.
Alex Pearce is going to go to Tex. So who what, you might get a Luke Ryan who likes to
probably
likes
got to a Fog. So he's going to be taking their third defender. What's that, like a Brandon Walker or something? I'm not sure. They've got a matchup for him, and he's a pretty high marking player, and he plays that backup ruck role a little bit like what Aaron Cadman does. So I think he's a good pick, actually, Chris Burgess.
Yeah, I'd say it would actually be Draper there, Lou, who's playing his second game. So there's every chance that he gets off the chain a little bit. So yeah, don't mind the Chrissy Burgess. Not
90
there.
BFL average too, Chris Burgess last year.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with you, Luke, just because it's another Port Adelaide question. This one's from John. He's interested in Kane Farrell. He's asked if he's the new Houston, but what are your thoughts on Kane Farrell's role? He's looked excellent to start, but off two pretty soft matchups. Is it sustainable?
No, I don't think it is. It's just an outside player that's making his bread at the moment. From memory, he's filling up a little bit on kick-ins too. It's been a soft two matchups for Port so far, and Houston and Farrell have been running off the back of stoppage there and just absolutely seagulling there. Burton too, to a lesser extent. But no, I think Farrell's a bit of a flash in the pan, and I'd be looking at him in draft, but not in classic. But I might throw to you for an opinion there, Harmy, because I can't talk about Port every time.
Oh, Kane Farrell. Jeez, I don't reckon. Sorry, I'm not that keen.
I always get nervous on these type of players that have been in the system for a long time and have never really shown it. Like outside of a Jack Sinclair who had a career best year at 28, if it hasn't happened by now from a fantasy point of view, why is it happening now? There hasn't been a massive role change. Yeah, they've picked up some tools, which is maybe allowing them to free up a little bit without as much worry. But yeah, I think with a Kane Farrell, it's potentially going to come back to the mean a little bit, Lou.
Yeah, and like it's a little bit like he's not winning the football, is he? Like he's not going in and winning it when the chips are down. He needs to be given the football to score, and that's not going to happen every single week.
Harmy, this one for you, and we're going to throw back here to a Stato stamp of approval. So for Chris, can you please tick off this trade? He's got Newcomb to Powell via DPP, and then that allows him to get Caulfield up to D'Ambrosio.
Done. Two very good trading options for the week. Very popular, but still lower priced mid prices. It'll go up in value and should score well. Don't have a buy. No issue with these trades there.
There we go. The first Stato stamp of approval for the season. Hopefully the big fella's back soon. A few questions to go, lads. We're pumping through these. It's good. Louis, this one's from DT Burner. Last week he traded Fisher to Bonner. Can he consider reversing that this week?
No, come on. No, you got to go elsewhere, I think. I wish you told me how much money he's got in the bank to do something there, but I don't think you're trading into Fish now. I think even owners are sort of looking to jump off in the next couple of weeks because I don't think he's going to skyrocket in price anyway. So, yeah, no, you're not doing that.
The round before, Bonner went 100 and Fisher went 60, and then Bonner's gone 60 and Fisher's gone 85. So there's every chance it just reverses back next week. So it's not really improving your side. So I definitely wouldn't be looking to reverse that. I'd be looking to go elsewhere, like Lou mentioned. Harmy, this one's from Shane Ware. Who goes first out of Newcomb, Butterick and Sexton?
Newcomb, Butterick, Sexton. Well, two of those guys have the bye. Butterick has been the poorest performer, in my opinion, to be the first one to go from what I can see. And then you've got Newcomb who's dropping cash. Sexton is not dropping cash, but he's not going up either. So it depends if you need the score this week. If you need the score in your best 18, you're feeling like you need that score boost, then you could hold Newcomb and trade Sexton, get some more points on field that way. My opinion is that Sexton and Butterick probably both need to go as a priority.
Mirror your thoughts there, Harmy. Lou, last question for you, and I'm going to throw a hypothetical at you. Marcus Bontempelli, if it comes out this week and he doesn't have a ceiling score against the Eagles, do owners just have to stick fat, or would there be cause for concern?
I'd be sticking fat, to be honest. I don't have that many concerns over Marcus Bontempelli. He's well and truly got the role. He's in centre bounces all the time. He's got high time on ground, and he's the dog's best player. He certainly hasn't gotten off to the greatest start, but that's quite often the risk that you take when you do start somebody priced at 117. But I do think he can sort of revert back to his mean, and I sort of see it as all upside from here with two poorer scores, which haven't necessarily burnt you either. We sort of look at the floor of players at the end of every single season, and if you looked and saw a 90, you'd be pretty happy with that too.
Yeah. Holmesy, I'm an owner. Let's say he hits 100 this week, I'll still hold because I've got faith he'll come good and he doesn't have a bye anytime soon.
Yeah, and I know Lou's been a massive, talker of this strategy over the years. If Marcus Bontempelli has another low score, then the rest of the comp is absolutely going to be targeting him, and then you're the one that's going to miss out if you trade him out and then everyone gets on him and he goes off. So absolutely, we're going to be looking to target him, which means you absolutely have to hold. You don't lose money unless you sell. So that's where I'd be looking with Marcus Bontempelli. All right, lads, that wraps us up for another big episode. I know Lou wanted this one to be a 40-minute type pod, but we've gone nearly 55 minutes. We're almost there, Lou. Just one closing thought, Harmy. I'm going to throw you on the spot. Can you just give our listeners a little bit of insight into what you're thinking with this week and how you're looking to attack?
Well, how I'm looking to attack, you know what? I've actually started to do a list of players that are primos that I feel are dropping and potentially going to have buys coming up over the next month or so, and looking at who I might want to be trading in coming off their buys. So that's probably one thing that I've been looking to do, mate. Yeah.
Love that from you, Harmy. And no doubt over the next couple of weeks when we start getting the podcast up and about more, we're going to get you to have your Harmy's Five, where you can list your targets and really help the listeners out, because there's no coach better on the podcasting scene in terms of finding value and finding the right players to upgrade. So that's it. Just a reminder to everyone listening to this, please follow us on PodPod at PodPodAFL on X. Leave a rating and review on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. That's really going to help us out. And yeah, look, we recorded Wednesday this week. We're going to try and stay Mondays, but at the moment with everything we got going on, it's been a little bit tough, but we'll still be here each and every week. And we're looking forward to continuing on this season with you all. So have a good week, and we'll be back next week to review round 3. Cheers.